Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, each and every single person out there on the internet tuning in today to see, thank you, Dan, for that Queen Elizabeth wave, watch Take the Black live, the only show on the internet where we talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, books, TV, horses, spaceships, etc., hosted by myself, yes. Dan Selke of winnerscoming.net, Daniel Roman of winnerscoming.net, and special guest host, Scruffy the Dog.
Oh, what a cutie. He's so good.
Thanks for showing up, everybody. Hello, Julie. Glad to see you. I know it's hard for you. I'm so sorry about that. I really am, but I'm glad you can make it. Hey, Robert. Hey, Mimi. Good to see you. And look, we won't beat around the bush like we ever do.
Never.
But the House of the Dragon trailers for season 2 came out last Thursday, a day after we record this show. That was inconsiderate of HBO. It's part of my ongoing theory that Ryan Condal is trying to destroy us, but we're here now. And instead of watching the trailers, which have lots of juicy new information, we figured that everyone's already kind of done that. So what we're going to do is we've taken a lot of stills from these new juicy, naughty, delicious trailers, and we're going to walk through them because they highlight some especial moments. They highlight some things we should be taking note of, aware of, things to look out for. Although before we do, I'm going to break my rule about not beating around the bush. Just really quick, what did all of you out there, and Daniel, you specifically, what did you think of the dual trailer gimmick? Because they released two trailers, one for kind of Team Black with Rhaenyra and one for Team Green with Aegon and his supporters. Did you like that? Did you hate that?
I loved that. I think whatever marketing person at HBO came up with that idea deserves a raise, clearly. I think for a few reasons I like it. One is, as Robert says, it is a baller idea. I loved it as well. I think it's a lot of fun. And like in terms of getting, you know, all of us engaged and talking about it, that's great. But also like, from a different perspective, it also means we essentially got like twice the amount of stuff to talk about from the trailers because they showed us a lot more stuff. I think it was, I haven't seen anyone who really didn't like the dual trailers aside from maybe that it was leaning into some fandom toxicity, which we could talk about a little bit if you want. Dan, what did you think of this daring approach?
Good. I mean, I wouldn't call it daring. It's not like they split the atom or anything. It was fun. Yeah, of course. Black, Team Green.
They split the fandom, which is like the next closest thing.
No, they didn't. There's a war going on. Sure, release trailers for both sides. I also will say, and we'll talk about it a little more when we get to the shots. The reason it surprised me a little bit, and I wonder if this is just the marketing team kind of having this idea, or if this is indicative of something we're going to see in the show. That if you ask me, the first season, despite some attempts to be even-handed when it came to the depictions of both sides of the conflict, it really did seem like most of the fan sympathies went to Rhaenyra, to her uncle husband Daemon, to her upstanding son Jace, and to kind of characters on that side of the playing field. Like, sure, people think that Aegon or Aemond is a badass, but like no one likes the lecherous Aegon and Alicent. is I've been split on for a long time.
Yeah, I think people liked
my
Allison.
Hope, some. I'm split and I'm people. My hope is that the fact that they released two trailers means that they're going to make more of an effort to really kind of spread the love around in the second season.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. And I think we're at a point in the story where it needs that. So Mimi says season one was biased for Team Black. And like, I do think that part of that is just the nature of season one and the characters in it, because most of the like Team Green characters really aren't relevant till very late in the season. Like, we didn't see most of the actors who were going to play those roles until episode eight. Is like we saw younger versions, but that's not quite the same, obviously. So I think that you're right. I think they're getting a little bit more even-handed with how they're dealing with these two sides, and I think they need to for where they are in the story. So I'm
I
hopeful
agree.
that it'll keep being that the case, because there are fascinating characters on both sides of the conflict, and it is not a black
There
and white
should be.
situation or a black and green situation.
Oh.
Oh yeah, like they're both sides are going to do atrocities, as well as heroic things. Rhaenyra is not going to be a straight hero by the end of this story. Like, spoiler alert. Julie, who liked Allison, they're people. I am people. I think they made her sympathetic in ways I liked. They made Allison more sympathetic than the book. They kind of sanded off the rough edges for a lot of the characters, I think. Maybe except Damon, who's Damon, and changing that would be madness.
Who was the best one? Like, take a
Who
cue,
was?
HBO.
Yes, they
I'll talk
didn't
about that a
need to
little more
sand off the
as we look.
edges.
I'm honestly a little afraid. Like, you're saying both sides will commit atrocities. I'm like, will they, or will both sides have their dragons just act on their own and do bad things?
Both sides will commit
We'll
unfortunate
see.
accidents that are not their fault. How's that?
Which would be horrible, but we'll see what
It
happens
would.
when it airs on June
Yeah.
16th.
Yes.
Yes. For now, let's look at some of these beautiful images. Okay, Dan, we got our
Wait, can
first
I
image.
ask? Can I
I
ask?
guess,
Like,
sure.
as we can leave the image up, but I'm curious. Let us know in the chat which trailer you liked more.
Ooh.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Dan, what are we looking at here?
Okay, we are looking at Stormbreaker Bay near Storm's End, the castle where
Yeah.
Rhaenyra Targaryen's son, Lucerys Velaryon, went down, or rather got chopped to bits up by
Chopped.
Vhagar and Aemond. And this has definitely got to be Rhaenyra going to the site of her son's death, maybe finding, like, I don't know, a stray ear, and probably mourning what used to be her teenage son and who is now bone meal.
Yeah, I mean, so this is one of the shots that got me really excited in the trailer. In Fire and Blood, Luke's remains are never recovered. One of the kind of rumors is that the head of his dragon gets found. This seems pretty clearly like Rhaenyra going to the beach, like you said, Shipbreaker Bay, Syrax kind of roaring and mourning over her. I'm nervous about what she's going to find, because we are going to, you know, we'll look at it in a second, but we do see that she'll have some mourning to do. So I'm already anticipating the heartache here.
When the heartache is over. All right, go on. What's the next picture? What are they?
So, you know, Rhaenyra, whatever she finds, however they do it, they're going to hold a funeral for Luke. We saw a few different scenes of this in the trailer. It is appropriate. This image is not from the trailer. This is a press image that HBO released alongside it. And the fascinating thing about this to me, the really notable thing here is obviously Jace is here. In Fire and Blood, Jace is off in Winterfell and the Eyrie while Luke gets killed. So he's kind of like off doing stuff. He's not immediately back, which means I think this funeral isn't going to take place in episode one is my guess. So either, yeah, I think two or three is kind of the logical place, because it has to happen before Rook's Rest. What do you think, Dan?
Again, just call me cynical. There are a few
options
cynical here. Thank you.
Okay, what are they?
This funeral takes place after Jace gets back, or the writers just take no cues from Game of Thrones, ignore distances and times, and just kind of have him be there. We shouldn't discount that. Like I should rain on parades, but I hope it makes sense. For Jace to be at the funeral for Luke, he either has to like turn around or get back lickety split, or they have to postpone it. I hope they make the good decision.
Yeah, it's kind of a tricky situation because, you know, the big thing that we're all looking forward to with Jace that I think we will maybe talk about, we'll talk about a little later, but obviously Jace's trip to Winterfell. That's a really cool part of the book. We know it's happening in the show. We saw bits of it. So I'm hopeful that they're not going to like skim that, you know, like part of me is a little nervous. They're going to start with Jace in Winterfell, and then he'll like fly back by the end of the episode or something, and they'll hold this funeral, you know, at the end of episode one. So yeah, you're right. That is possible. He's on Dragonback, so they can definitely fudge the times if they want to. I worry about like, but at what cost? But at what cost if we do that? We haven't heard anything about whether Jace is still going to visit the Eyrie.
Amanda Collin is in it.
She is. The Eyrie is relevant with a few different characters throughout the dance. So presumably Jace will, but seeing him at the funeral makes me a little nervous. So me, the best thing they could do is hold off the funeral until Jace gets back and take their time having him get back. Maybe they could parallel it with a certain other funeral that we're going to look at shortly.
Work. Yeah, writers, choose logic, choose goodness, choose light, not dark. Moving on. What's the next picture?
All right. Next up, we're going to look at the players on the board for this, some of the major players. In the chat, we have Mimi Faye says, I prefer the black trailer, but the green was more interesting. And the green is also about 15 seconds longer. We broke these down in exhaustive detail on winterscoming.net, and the green trailer is more substantial. They're like literally physically there are more shots in it than there are in the black trailer. Julie says black as well. So, but this character here, this is Aegon the Second Targaryen, played by Tom Glenn Carney. The leader, I'm going to put that in quotes, leader of the Greens. Do you think it's appropriate to put that in quotes? Or do you think what are your thoughts about Aegon how the marketing has handled him, what we should expect of him in this season.
I think he stole the trailers. He was my favorite part of the trailers.
Agree.
I think he was dynamic. I liked like this shot, him kind of saying like to war then, kind of like smarmy, smirking. That's a good attitude. There's other bits kind of after Blood and Cheese where he's kind of like angry. If they want to do this story right, Aegon has to go on a journey because he changes a lot over the course of this story.
Yeah.
And we got a complaint, I think, last Take the Black, we were doing this, by someone who said, I mean, thank you, comment always, little creep, says Julie, and I agree, who said that kind of Allison had taken kind of Aegon's role, and they had put Allison out in front for the first season, most of which Aegon wasn't born for.
Yeah.
I have hope that he's going to be a very big, important character. He should be. He is in the book. And the trailers make it look like it's going to happen. So I was excited by his presence in the trailers. I think he had a good showing. He's just, there was like tension when he was on screen. He looked on the Iron Throne. He kind of looked like he was, I don't know, like, what is he feeling? Is he comfortable up there? Is he angry? Is he not feeling like he should be up there? There's a lot to Aegon they haven't gotten to yet.
Yeah.
And the trailers made it look like they were going to get to it. And that made me excited.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I don't really buy into the whole, like, they've centered Alicent and Rhaenyra and Aegon is... Well, yes, they have. But I think, again, kind of like with talking about how the Greens might be more sympathetic this season, we'll get a more even-handed approach because they'll have more screen time with the actors who play them. I think that's kind of relevant to Aegon, too. Like, he was a kid or wasn't born for most of season one. They needed to show that this enmity started with Rhaenyra and Alicent, and that is true to the book. It does start with Rhaenyra and Alicent. But in general, I agree with you, though. He stole the trailers for me, too. He was, I think, you know, not the character I was most excited to see, but he's probably the one that has stuck in my mind the most from the trailers because we haven't seen much of him like this. So it does feel like this is going to be a big season for Aegon. And if things like Rook's Rest go down the way we think they are, or the way that they maybe do in the book in some ways, Aegon is going to have a pretty huge arc this season and in the show in general. So I think there's my hope for this is there's going to be a very natural progression with him where it starts out feeling like he's kind of like this pawn of Alicent and Otto. And by the end of the season, he's something different. And by the end of the show, he's something even more different. So yeah, I'm excited for Aegon II this season. Joffrey vibes a little bit, but better than Joffrey.
What's the next picture?
Speaking of Alicent, she's not feeling too well about all this stuff. This is kind of a funny screenshot that we have for her. But yeah, so this scene is, I think, in the green trailer. She is talking about the cost of war and stuff like that. And she kind of sinks down into a bathtub and she's holding her breath under there. She's real sad. Alicent has she's got a lot of sad face in the trailer. So despite anyone hoping that this will just be the Aegon and Rhaenyra show, I do think we're going to get quite a bit of Alicent this season too. What are your thoughts on this image, Dan?
I mean, you know, there's getting clean, then there's this. Alicent is a frustrating character because if we talk about like sanding the edges off people, and the first season had this habit of kind of absolving characters of responsibility for bad things they did, it happened like a few times too many for comfort. With Alice in particular, it was this bit where she does support putting her son on the throne over Aegon, but only because she makes a mistake and misinterprets her husband King Viserys's dying words. He says Aegon, he's talking about Aegon the Conqueror. She thinks he's talking about Aegon their son. And again, there's some reason to be nervous because in the trailer she says it again. She says, like, with his dying breath, he said that Aegon should be king. He never wanted a woman on the throne. And I'm like, oh my god, they're still doing this. I don't like that they just won't let her be awful. They won't let her be ambitious. They won't let her be malicious. And again, it's this paradoxical thing where if you take these edges off, the characters are less interesting, not more. Damon yes. is doing all kinds of heinous, horrible things, and we love him.
Yeah.
And I wish they would lean into that with everybody. And it's just one line in the trailer, but that's my kind of take on Allison. And I'm sure she'll be fine out of this bathtub scene.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. I think that was one of my least favorite changes, decisions, however we want to define it, that they made for season one, was that Allison misinterprets Viserys on her bed, on his deathbed, and that's why she decides to prop up her son instead of just like the ambitious power grab that it is. Like, there are very clear reasons why she does it in Fire and Blood. It, like, we didn't really need a, oh, but Viserys wanted him to be king. Like, the material is all there for the ambitious power grab. It would have been totally fine and believable without that. And I do agree with you. I think it weakens Allison as a character and the conflict as a whole to try to make it seem like both sides think they're doing the right thing. And like, you can still do that if one side is totally self-serving, you know, like you don't need to. Yeah. Or both. Exactly. It almost feels a little like they missed the opportunity to make her Cersei Lannister. And like, the material is there for her to be not quite as awful as Cersei, but like toeing that line a bit, which sure. then makes her later stuff even more powerful. Because Allison's, you know, fortunes will wax and wane as the series goes on.
Julie's yeah, great.
Julie does not like
the
Allison.
They give for her. She's a bitch, which again, I'm just saying, like, I love a bitch. I loved Cersei. Just go for it.
Yeah.
So that's what I was waiting for. And maybe they'll go. And also, yeah. JD Tavera says, you guys are flops. And JD, right. all I can say is, thank you.
Flip-flop, all right. JD.
What is the next? Go ahead. Sorry, Dan.
Nah, let's look at our next picture. So another major player in this conflict. This is Corlys Velaryon, played by Steve Toussaint, talking to Rhaenyra. And if I remember right, in this scene, he's kind of telling her, like, you got to cut off the head of the opposition, basically. Dan, you caught something about this that I missed that I think is a really great detail. And that is that Corlys here is wearing the Hand of the Queen pin. Mm-hmm. So it's official now, season two, Corlys Velaryon is Rhaenyra's Hand of the Queen. So his, speaking of fortunes, waxing and waning, seems like his are on the rise. How do you feel about Corlys in this whole debacle?
A good supporting character. I mostly want to put this on here so I could point out, we could point out that he's wearing the Hand of the Queen pin betwixt his dreads. That's really about it. But yeah, I am looking forward to seeing what he does. Shall we move on to the next one? The next bunch of pictures are all newcomers, brand new characters we either haven't seen before or just haven't seen on screen, though they're mentioned. Starting with this dude, Gawain Hightower, played by Freddie Fox, I believe. Allison's older brother. I think he was technically like in the first episode on Horse by Dan, but he didn't see his face. And, you know, obviously he'll be fighting with the Hightowers against the Blacks and Rhaenyra. Hope he's okay. I don't really care that much about him, actually. But maybe we'll fall in love with him. Should we move on?
I have a couple of things to say, because I as well don't really care about Gawain Hightower. But it's interesting that they're making the choice to bring him forward a bit more. You know, like you said, we did see him in season one. He just got on horse by Daemon, and then Daemon used it as an excuse to like give Allison, if I remember right, like the flowers and stuff as a way to stick it to Otto. I am curious to see how those kinds of little sprinkled bits of grudges will carry over into the war. I think a huge idea of the Dance of the Dragons is that the simmering grudges, the simmering issues between all these noble houses and all these family members kind of get an outlet to explode. And Gawain has some reasons he might not like people. The only big thing I will say about him that we know pretty much for certain is he is going to be involved in Rook's Rest. And I imagine that's what this shot is from. Rook's Rest being a large battle we're expecting to see in episode 4. So should be some probably tenuous times for Gawain Hightower there.
He kind of looks like he belongs in the Rings of Power. But
he does. I would believe you if you told me that's from the War of Wrath, that picture.
Yeah,
I'll just say that. Yeah.
I think he's
from Slow Horses, which is a show, like a British spy show on Apple TV Plus. He plays Spider. So people who like Slow Horses, you will see him in this.
Horses.
Yeah. What's right. next, Dan?
Who's our next newcomer?
Well, next, it's a dragon. It's not a person. Surprise. You thought we were just going to talk about people this whole time. Yes, they are. And this is, so it's not similar to Gawain, not technically a first appearance. This is Sunfire, Aegon II's dragon, who got really shafted in season one. They took away some of Sunfire's scenes that are in the book. He didn't appear at the coronation, stuff like that. We only got a very, very brief glimpse of him at the funeral on Driftmark when everyone was there. Right? Funeral? The gathering on Driftmark. Yeah. Laena Velaryon's funeral. He was there for that. But we're going to see a lot more of Sunfire in season 2. He's supposed to be the most beautiful dragon that has ever lived, basically. And apparently part of the reason they held him back for season 2 was so that they could put more effort into conveying that well. And here he is in the Dragon Pit, which is the place where the dragons live in King's Landing. I'm stoked for Sunfire. See, Aegon and Sunfire are kind of the two things where I'm like,
yeah,
that's exciting. What are your thoughts about this? Because I loved this shot.
Yeah, you said it all. Who's next? We're the next newcomer.
next is, so this is another dragon.
Go ahead, Daniel.
This is a little bit blurry, but this is one that gets me really excited. So this very quick little shot here, this is a Moon Dancer. That is Baela Targaryen's dragon. You can see a little bit of Moon Dancer and Baela in both the black and the green trailer. The black trailer a little bit more. You can see that it's Baela that's on Moon Dancer's back. So a young dragon, you know, Moon Dancer hatched from an egg when Baela was a kid. That was like a whole thing in House of the Dragon season 1 because her sister, Rhaena, has not had an egg hatch for her. Baela is, I would say, one of the closest things this story has in the book to like an Arya Stark type character, where she's like very headstrong. She has opinions about what she should be doing as a dragon rider. She doesn't really like being left on the sidelines. They've aged her up a little bit, I think, in the show. So I don't know if we'll get quite the same Arya vibe as the book, where it's like she's really like a little kid doing this stuff. I am so excited to see what they do with her in season 2. I'm also a little nervous because these shots of her and Moon Dancer almost look similar to the forest at Rook's Rest. And like, spoiler here, like Baela is not involved at Rook's Rest whatsoever. She doesn't really ride her dragon in combat much in the war until very late in it. So I think there's a good chance they're going to give Baela more material. And I'm nervous about how intense that may end up being. What are your thoughts? Because I know you were excited to see Baela screaming and riding her dragon in the last trailer.
I love the emotion of it. They're definitely expanding her role, and whether it's a good idea remains to be seen. But I'm going to trust it. I hope they know what they're doing. Who is the next newcomer? It was the big one.
It is. Why don't you introduce this one?
I will. So, okay, we said earlier that Jacaerys Velaryon, Rhaenyra's eldest son, Jace, to his buddies, was traveling to the north, which he was at the end of the first season. And we know he was going there to court people for Rhaenyra, to woo them to her cause, including Cregan Stark, young Lord Cregan Stark, the young Lord of Winterfell, played by British actor, if you can believe it, Tom Taylor. He's been someone people are excited to see. And I think HBO must know that because they only gave us like a side profile from the back. That's Tom Taylor as Cregan Stark on the left, Jace on the right, going like, and they're at the wall, which is pretty cool because they don't go to the wall in the books. So we don't know how that'll happen, but it'd be fun to see the wall again. I'm sure they'll go up there as part of the sucking up to Cregan Stark process to kind of take a tour of the North to get him on the side. That'll be cool because Cregan's a good character. He plays a big role in the story going forward. He kind of is in and out. But if they can increase Bela's role, they might be able to increase Cregan Stark's too. That's to be determined. But he could be an important new character. And of course, we want to see the North again. Come on, who doesn't want to go back to the wall and just kind of just, if we're no other reason than fan service. So it'll be fun to have that part of it. Do you think they're hiding him on purpose? Why is the only shot of this highly anticipated character like 3/4 looking like away from the camera from the back?
I think that they're preserving it a little bit. So keeping in mind at least a little bit that while we're very in the know about who all these characters are and how they're relevant, there are probably people watching who don't know the story of Fire and Blood, don't know that there will be a Stark. So this is like their first real hint that that's going to be the case, like on a wider audience scale. So I think they are building up that anticipation before they really show Cregan. I think part of that too is, like you said, Cregan Stark is really in and out. And I think unless they expand his role in the book, I think there's a very good chance they will expand his role. I mean, we're already seeing that a little bit here with the wall, because like you said, the wall is not in the book at all.
Ooh.
Or in the Dance of the Dragons, I should say. Yeah. And
good save.
But there's a perfect opportunity to go see it. Like you said, touring the North. Jason, Cregan go hunting. They hang out for a while. Like they become friends in the book. Yeah. They bro down. So this is a great opportunity to do that at the very place where Jon Snow will one day bro down with Samwell Tarly. Like, I love that. That's great. I do think that they're holding Cregan back. And part of that might be the marketing and building anticipation. Part of it might also be he has a very small role this season. I do think there is that possibility. Really sure, we have no idea. But in terms of the overall story, Cregan is really, he shows up here and then he's very relevant later. But there's kind of a lot of middle ground there where he's not super involved while the Targaryens are off killing each other. So I also we'll see what happens.
Pelorius 3000, good name, says they want to look like Jon Snow just a little bit, which I agree.
Yeah,
both these guys kind of look like Jon Snow. I mean, look, you get fantasy folk with swords and cloaks and long dark hair, you're going to kind of look like Jon Snow. I'll also say really briefly before we move on, Harry Colet, who plays Viserys Valerian, thank Christ, they've gotten rid of the literal end of a mop they plop on his head for the first season and given him some either a much better wig or used his natural hair. So he looks a lot better. Good for him.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that he had a wig in season one.
It was rough, too.
That was my least favorite haircut of the whole damn season was Jace's haircut. It just looked, I felt bad for him. I got pangs of man, anyone who's ever been maimed by a hairstylist or, had their, speak from experience, their grandpa cut their hair in a kitchen and had it turn out badly, they can empathize with Jace. So I'm happy for him that he's, Valorius. He's in his luscious hair era here. Jace should have a good role this season. He, just like Aegon kind of comes more into his own during this part of the story. I expect that Jace will as well. So that's exciting stuff. Who's next, Dan?
Who is next? Because that's another important one.
This is a very important
one. Maybe the most important one.
I did a double take when I realized what was happening because they hid this in the trailer, this shot. They make it look
like... It's a lovely shot, by the way. All the food arrayed out. It's a very nicely framed shot.
It is.
Okay. This is important. This is Rhaenyra Targaryen. This is spoilers, by the way, so just clamp down the mirrors if you want. Sitting with what appears to be basically her dragon air force. Every person at this table rides a dragon, including Rhaenyra, which is one of Rhaenyra's big advantages in the war. Now, we know two of them. We got Jace to her right, our left. Oh, no. Yes. And we have Baela Targaryen to our right, her left, over here. They can both ride dragons. Oh, Vermax and Moondancer, respectively. The other three folk are new characters. They are the Dragon Seeds. Spoiler, 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 spoiler warning. At one point in the book, and we assume in the show, Rhaenyra will have more dragons than she has people to ride them, and she puts out a call, basically. Anybody who can tame these riderless dragons and will fly them for me and fight for me in this war, I'll give you lands, I'll give you titles, get on it. So we have, on the left of the picture, we got, the left of the image, we got Adam of Hull, played by Clinton Liberty, the one with kind of the dreads and the dark skin. But at the center of it, opposite Rhaenyra, we got Ulf White, who's, I forget who plays him, but someone does. And then on the right, at the bottom, we have Hugh Hammer, played by Kieran Boo from Warrior. I'm looking forward to. Really cool.
Nice.
This is a good story. I'm looking forward to seeing how they do it. The thing that disturbs me about this picture, which I do love, it looks suspicious. Is that there's a character from the book named Nettles, who is one of the Dragon Seeds, just a young girl who doesn't really have any Targaryen or Valyrian blood in her, who manages to we'll see. I'm sure the red people take care of that. Who befriends and tames a dragon kind of through sheer wit and will. And she's not here, and I'm starting to be afraid they've cut her and replaced her with Bela, like given Bela more dragon riding to do and given Nettles nothing. Or maybe they'll have her come back next season, or she just isn't in this photo. But I am a little worried about that. Or just a little, that's what I think might be happening. It's a nice picture, though.
It is a nice picture. So yeah, this is in the black trailer. There's a shot where it looks like Rhaenyra is talking to Daemon, but that's just they spliced it to throw you off the scent. She's talking to this group about how she's going to fight the war and she's going to win it. And like you said, the Dragon Seeds, so the name Dragon Seed, that kind of comes from this idea that there are lots of people who got Targaryen blood from being bastards somewhere in their lineage. So that's kind of where that name comes from. And then, yeah, Rhaenyra invites them to come tame dragons, ride them, join her. To me,
I know.
So I have a thought about Nettles. But first, my thought about this dinner is even more than her Air Force. This almost feels to me like schmoozing up your new recruits, your young guard of new dragon riders, because things have gone sour in some way and you want them to feel like they're now a part of this war effort. There will be casualties kind of across the board in this war. And like you said, there will come a point where Rhaenyra has more dragons than she has riders. So I'm nervous. I will say, so you're positive. You know the guy from Warrior, Kieran Boo. He's on the right.
It
drives me nuts that Ulf White has dark hair and Hugh Hammer has white hair. That's going to bug the hell out of me, but here we are.
They really are obsessed with like making people blonde. It's like they think they need to, or they won't know that they're dragon riders. I don't know. Like,
well,
Rhaenys Targaryen too is like dark haired in the book. And then they turned her blonde just because, I don't know, in the head of an HBO writer, it's like, what do you mean she rides a dragon? She doesn't have white blonde hair. You can get a Spirit Halloween. She has to.
Well, I think at least one of them does have white hair in the book. I think that is a thing where it's like, that's part of why they're like, yeah, I'm a Targaryen bastard somewhere in my lineage. I have white hair. Look at me. So now about Nettles, because Robert Harris is saying, I don't really see how they could do away with Nettles. That would be weird. I wouldn't be surprised if they did, though. He says, fantasy fan says, I doubt they will remove her. I'm in that camp. I think Ryan Condal has made it pretty clear he wants to stay. He wants to keep all of the things that made the story special. He refused to change Rhaenys and Rhaenyra to have different names. You know, HBO said that might be confusing. And he said, we can't change these names. So it's hard for me to imagine him being like, yeah, cut that Nettles person. I think similar to Daeron Targaryen, where we know he's in the story, Condal has confirmed Daeron's coming. It's just a matter of when. I think we're in a similar position with Nettles. I think you could be onto something saying they might give some of her material this season to Bela. So spoiler here, Nettles, the way this is my crackpot tinfoil hat theory, and like whatever, I'm fine with it. It's funny. I'm sticking with it. Nettles tames her dragon. Its name is Sheep Stealer by feeding it sheep. She feeds That's it sheep weird. Until it trusts her, and then she rides the dragon. So I bet Nettles is just off. That's going to take time to feed a dragon a sheep every day until it trusts you. So she's going to spend this season feeding Sheep Stealer sheep so that she can have good material next season and a full arc next season, because she is a crucial, crucial character, especially once things start getting bad for the Blacks. That's all. I don't want to go too deep into spoilers, but she has a very important role to play in that, and I don't know how they would do it without her. I'm sure they could think of a way, but the way that it is laid out in the book is so compelling, I don't know why you'd want to. So I don't think we need the save a Nettles petition, Julie. I think that they're I think they will give us Nettles. It's just a question of when and how.
I'm probably being anxious. We don't know anything for sure yet. I'm just noting what I see, and maybe
does it nettle you?
Let's move on. next up, that was good. Okay. That was good. I like puns and I encourage puns.
Thank you.
Next few shots, we might just skip What Are We Watching or even Lightning Round today, because we still have some stuff to get through.
Yeah.
Next few shots are another big spoiler tastic montage. Yep. We know the blood and cheese incident's going to come up, which is an incident where Daemon hires some dudes, or Daemon and Mysaria, we'll see what the show does with it, to get revenge for the Greens killing Rhaenyra's kid, Luke. So how do you get revenge when your enemies kill one of your children? Well, you try and kill, fill in the dot. I don't even want to say it out loud in case YouTube demonetizes us. There's a plot to get some revenge.
That's good.
And
yeah.
What we're seeing here, this looks like Daemon Targaryen in his crime hoodie, which we know he and all people of good breeding wear, is at the gates of King's Landing, sneaking in, being sneaky. We think that might be the character of Blood. Blood and Cheese are these two mercenaries. We don't know their real name. It's a gold
cloak. That'd be a change to Blood, because he's supposed to be a disgraced gold cloak, but maybe he's still in it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're that concerned about changing. But, you know, that's the thing. Like you said, like, yeah, he kept the names, but like, I can list off like 10 changes they did. It's not like they're not making any.
True.
They informed the gold cloaks. They might let him in. What's the next shot look like?
The next shot is our first real.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Indisputable, I think, shot of Blood and Cheese. This is them. There's really no, like, 9 out of 10 chance that's who we're looking at here. I don't know who else it would be. Going through the passageways of the Red Keep.
The Red Keep.
Yeah.
Going to their destination. The Red Keep, which is, of course, where King Aegon, Queen Helena, and their children live. And this next shot is also pretty effectively haunting. I like when House of the Dragon or Game of Thrones in general plays with the aftermath. It's kind of horror, like the blood and cheese scene, or several Game of Thrones deaths. Like, one thing you can do in kind of medieval fiction is really get in touch with how fragile the human body is. We saw that on a lot on Game of Thrones, and sometimes a shot or a scene is more horrifying if you kind of leave the specifics to the imagination. And someone gets very, very hurt in the blood and cheese incident, and the idea of just having a scene with like a bloody sheet, the implications are pretty chilling. So
yeah,
that could be spooky. If they do this right, it'll horrify everybody.
This is when I think of the Dance of the Dragons, this is up there as a comparable moment. Not quite as horrifying, because what is, but like kind of sits similar to the Red Wedding in my mind when I think of this conflict in terms of like a shocking, horrifying moment. And like, it's easy to forget because George R. R. Martin has written all these fantasy books and stuff. He's written quite a lot of horror too. In his early days as a writer. And you really see that come across in sequences like Blood and Cheese, like The Red Wedding. There's something about the way that he conveys these things that lends itself to, like you said, like there's a sense of body horror. There's a sense of ominousness. And when the shows capture that, it can be really powerful. And this is going to be a big test, I think, for House of the Dragon, how well they do this scene. And most likely it's going to happen in the premiere. So get ready for a fun time, everyone.
As Mimi Faye asked, do we think they're going to do it? They're going to show it or do it off camera? By the way, I think now we can probably start not being euphemistic. Blood and Cheese, because I want to talk about it, because Blood and Cheese, just plug your ears,
spoiler,
you want spoilers.
Your last chance to go away.
Blood and Cheese are hired by Daemon, and they sneak into the Red Keep, and they kill one of King Aegon's and Queen Helena's young sons, Jacerys, who we saw very briefly in the first season. Man, I mean, killing kids.
Jaehaerys,
yeah. That is Targaryens. A hard thing to do on camera.
Yes.
They're going to have to thread the needle so carefully with how they do this.
Agree.
I mean, Fantasy Fan says it's HBO, they will show it. I mean, they showed Shireen burning alive, but not like we didn't see her as her skin crisped or anything.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm sure they had long talks about exactly how to show it, how much to show it, when to cut away from the scene entirely, when to cut away from the action of what's happening, when to cut to the eyes, the screams, the other characters reacting. I'm sure they spent a lot of time in the editing room finding just the right balance. And I'm nervous for them, and I'm nervous for me, and I'm nervous for everybody. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah, Bubo, fun name, says, did Game of Thrones kill kids on screen? And the answer is yes. Multiple times, like Arya killed that kid in season one as well. So like throughout its run, but like Julie says, how much to leave to the imagination? Like there's definitely going to be, like you said, a very fine needle to thread there, because it is horrific, but there is also affects a lot of different people who are in that room in different ways. So I think they have options for, like, I'm sure that they debated, like, down to the frame, when to cut between different people in different shots, because like it is really horrifying moments. And I think they will show parts of it. It's just a question of, are they going to show actual, you know, the knife stroke? Are they going to cut to someone's face at that point and then show a body hit the like, they'll show it. It's just a question of exactly how it's framed. So
yeah, like basically, if they do the scene correctly, House the Dragon is getting an Emmy. And if they do it even a little bit wrong, HBO is going bankrupt. Like it's going to be
it's
a
that
big
type
deal.
Of scene. Yeah,
we'll see what happens. And then in our final, they did kill a baby in Game of Thrones. I remember that.
Yeah.
In the second season, the first episode, when the King Golkos are going around killing all Robert's bastards, it happened off screen. But I mean, it happened and it was pretty spooky. So there is precedent for baby killing. Anyway,
that's the subtitle of the episode. There is precedent for baby killing. Yeah. Westeros, everyone. The next one, we can kind of just keep this brief because we have other stuff to get to. This is most likely the funeral aftermath. Not most likely. It is. What else could it be?
I mean, we see fancy dress party. Yeah.
It's just go out this way. Alicent and Helena Targaryen with veils on in a procession. We got shots of this. This shot is actually from the black trailer, but we see this sequence in both the black and the green trailer. I am curious how much or how little they're going to parallel this with Rhaenyra and her family grieving Luke. Maybe not like cross-cutting it, but like one episode, one the next or something, like, because the way this happens in the book, it really is like the chapter title is A Son for a Son. And it really does like show you what happens to Luke. And then immediately afterward, you get Blood and Cheese. And the show kind of almost missed its opportunity to play that parallel the same way, because it's a television show. Because they ended a season, they couldn't immediately give you the next chapter right after. So I think it's going to be but the parallel is very strong. I think there's going to be some way that they play with it. But anyway,
we're
that's
all just sitting here being nervous. And we'll see what happens on June 16th, possibly the first day.
Okay.
All right.
Woo.
What's the next shot? And Booba, by the way, thinks the helmets on the show are silly. Yeah, I'm sure if I looked at them closely, maybe. I don't know. Like, they haven't really stuck out to me as silly yet, but there's always time. Some quick shots of battle so we wrap this up.
Yes. What's
we
this
got
one? You
here
know this
the
better than me.
Blackwoods. I mean, you know, I think you know it. It's the Blackwoods and the Brackens, who are two noble houses in the Riverlands. Looks like they're coming to blows. They hate
Looks
each
like.
other. It's a part of like kind of George R. R. Martin's Westeros mythology that didn't get a lot of attention in Game of Thrones. The Blackwood Bracken feud. Of course, one of them sides with Rhaenyra, one of them sides with Aegon. One's black, one's green. And of course, they fight because the Hatfields and McCoys didn't need much prodding, and neither do the Blackwoods and the Brackens. That'll be fun. I'm not, this probably isn't going to be like a really heavy battle. That'll be the one later in the season, but it should be probably, it might even kick the season off. I don't know. We'll see. The Battle of the Burning Mill, it's called. What happens after that, Richard?
Yeah,
No,
I was just going to say, I imagine this, like you said, this is going to be fairly early on. I'm happy the Blackwoods and the Brackens are getting their due, because that is a pretty memorable, like, just fun little grudge that Martin has running throughout all of his Westeros books a little bit. Yeah, should be good times. Sorry, Richard, what is next now that I've rudely interrupted the proceedings?
Well, to be fair, I was trying to rudely rush us through. This is probably Cargill Bowl, the two identical twin Kingsguard brothers.
Are we calling it that?
I don't know.
I
threw it out there, and now I'm getting some mouth about it, so I guess maybe I'll pull back. Eric and Eric Cargill, met them in the first season. Eventually they fight, because one is with Rhaenyra, one's with Aegon, and that's definitely what's happening there. And finally, I couldn't end this without a shot of Vhagar, everyone's favorite enormous dragon. There's Aemon, tiny little speck on top of him, of her. Probably the Battle of Rook's Rest. There were other pictures from the trailer, you know, like of people riding on horses and just, I don't know, they're on horses. They're at the Battle of Rook's Rest. It's a fight. And I'm sorry to... fantasy fan, we did not include the bit with Daemon's speech. Daemon goes to Harrenhal and basically says, hey, turn the castle over or I'll kill you all.
I do want to note one thing about that. I do want to note one thing about that Daemon shot, which is we get a lot of scenes in the trailers of Daemon sneaking into the castle, or maybe not even sneaking, but he lands Caraxes on Harrenhal in the night while it's storming, and then he walks in. But that shot is set during the day while he's sitting on Caraxes. So I am kind of curious if that is actually him talking to the Strongs who hold Harrenhal, or if that's from a different scene. Because the trailers do some kind of misleading cross-cutting with stuff like that. Because he walks in to where the Castellan is and presumably gives them the ultimatum there. So unless that's like he said that before and then he lands Caraxes on their castle, like they surrender without a fight in the book. They're just like, oh shit, there's a dragon on our castle. We should probably strike our banners and surrender. So yeah, that's the one thing I wanted to note about that Daemon speech. We may see him strong arm more than just the Strongs.
Ooh, nicely done.
Puns for days.
And puns are very, very welcome here. And that is some of the biggest moments from the trailer. Do you think we should do the lightning round, Daniel, or should we just wrap up? Because we have jawed on for a minute.
We got time.
I guess we do.
You got somewhere to be? Well, do we want to go right into the lightning round? Is there anything you're watching you just want to briefly mention or nah?
I want to get back to Invincible so badly. I spent like literally all last week just doing nothing but Three Body Problem, like every night, and then writing reviews. And so I'm so ready to do something else. But not particularly, no. And then Shogun, I catch up on too, which of course is wonderful.
Yeah, I just started Three Body Problem a few days ago. I'm enjoying it so far. Just got to the rehydrate episode. Watch that. That was
some fun one, yeah.
That was some fun times, some fun, weird times. David Benioff and Dan Weiss, you keep doing what you're doing. And then, aside from that, I finished Halo. Shogun is amazing. That is a top tier limited series, I think. That show is just so, so good. I really loved the last episode. Robert Harris says, yeah, don't cut us short. We won't, okay, Robert. Yeah, beyond that, I'm still reading The Sunlit Man, which is Brandon Sanderson. Really interesting book set in the future of the Cosmere. And aside from that, I'm this close to the end of Final Fantasy VII. I'm savoring it. It's magnificent. Man, that game hit me in the heartstrings so much.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Shall we lightning?
Let's do it.
Okay. Is there an order to this lightning?
Of course.
I assume
there
you're
going to
ask
Daniel.
Me this first one.
Put 20 seconds on the clock. Well, I guess I have an opinion. I can talk for 20 seconds about it. Daniel,
oh, I'm sure.
Yes. This weekend, a new movie opens in theaters. Godzilla X Kong, the new empire. Interested?
Is it Godzilla X Kong? Is it Godzilla times Kong? No, I'm sure it's X. You're right. I'm like mildly interested. I mean, kaijus beating each other up is never a bad time for me.
Sure.
I'm not super up on my MonsterVerse, like shared universe stuff. So I actually haven't seen the first Godzilla V Kong. So now it's the sequel, Godzilla X Kong. Maybe I'll have to watch them both. Mildly interested. Oh, okay. For the first time ever in history, in the history of the British Empire, they are allowing new episodes of Doctor Who to be released simultaneously around the world, which means they're being released really late in Britain. The British aren't thrilled. What does this mean? What are the deeds?
It means that because the episodes are coming out everywhere, like on Disney Plus, outside Britain, on BBC in Britain, BBC iPlayer, like because of time zones, they're kind of get released for Americans during the day, and then like the British are an afterthought, like late at night. And the British are like, this is a British ass show. This is the British show. We should be kind of prioritized. And there's a bit of a flap, but still happening. All right, Daniel, I don't know if you've seen this movie. I never have, so it doesn't matter who gets this.
You've never seen this?
Nope.
I have Scruffy opinions.
Kind of looks like Falcor is what I've been told.
Yes, he does. Yes, a little gentlemanly Falcor back there.
The Neverending Story is getting a movie reboot.
I hate it. Leave things alone, people. Make new things. This is one of those unique instances in time, this movie, where it's like remaking it just feels like folly. Like, I don't know. I don't like it. Even though it's a cool story, even though I like give it to a new generation, fine. But there's just something about the, like, this was almost before my time a little bit. It just feels this and The Crow. What are we doing? What are we doing here, people? Anyway, onward.
And Boo Boo, that is the buzzer. We have 20 seconds to answer these questions. And if we go over the 20 seconds, we get the buzzer.
That's right.
Move it on.
Buzzed into infamy and shame. Boobo, you're right. They did actually show the Halo at the end of Halo Season 2. Oh, yeah. I want to know your opinion on this. The world's first Dragon Ball theme park will be built in Saudi Arabia.
You know, I didn't look into this that deeply. I just saw the headline, Saudi Arabia, really? Of all places. I think it's cool. There's more like kind of specific theme parks. I know that Nintendo has a couple of theme parks around the world now. And now Dragon Ball's theme park, just as Akira Toriyama passes. That's like a cool idea. Saudi Arabia, really? I wouldn't have thought of that. But
it's kind of amazing that it took this long for there to be a Dragon Ball theme park.
It is a very, very popular franchise.
Yeah.
Okay. Daniel.
Yes.
Outlander has started production on its eighth and final season. And the second half of season 7 won't air until November, which is, FYI, a while away.
Yeah, so Outlander, good news that they're in production. I'm kind of shocked that they're waiting until November to air part 2 of season 7. That is a more than a year break, because part 1 aired like last June, I think. So that's a huge break, but it's the end of Outlander, so I'm kind of fine with that. Like, let us all savor it. Take your time. this is our last run with Jamie and Claire Fraser. Okay. So Dan, the next Pirates of the Caribbean movie will be a reboot, according to Jeremy Bruckheimer.
It's Jerry Bruckheimer, producer.
My bad, Jerry.
Yeah. I mean, you were talking about you don't like reboots of the NeverEnding Story. I guess I'm at the point in my life where I'm just like, I'm not going to see them. I'm not going to see a Pirates of the Caribbean reboot probably. So, oh, go ahead if it makes you happy. I just hope they make other good stuff on the side that I do want to see.
That's fair. It's always so interesting with reboots. Like, I feel like a little bit of a hypocrite because I'm loving the Final Fantasy VII one, but like,
feels like
there needs to be a reason for it. And that one, there is a very clear reason, I think. But yeah, anyway, I'm taking up time.
Thank you,
that's not part of the lightning round. Is Martha getting on me?
No, she just said the episode was awesome.
Phew. Yes.
Anyway, let's move on.
Thank you, Martha. All right. I think this one's for me, right?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Oh, yeah, because you like Jurassic stuff.
Don't you skip
Scarlett Johansson is in talks to star in the next Jurassic World movie, Tyrannosaurus.
If there's one thing that could make me more excited for a new Jurassic World movie, it's if Scarlett Johansson was the lead in it. I think that's great. Sure. I'm a little, you know, a little nervous about what they're going to do. Like, they're definitely milking the hell out of this franchise, but they reportedly have, like, Gareth Edwards attached, like, the writer, the screenwriter from the original movie who worked with Michael Crichton. So, like, cautiously optimistic, but also I see what you're doing there, Universal.
it's not a reboot, at least. It is technically new.
Okay. Yes. Grateful for that. Don't ever reboot Jurassic Park. That would be... What is the Ian Malcolm quote? You were so focused on if you could, you didn't stop to think if you should. That's what that would be if they ever rebooted it. Anyway, Timothée Chalamet, Hollywood Golden Boy, Paul Atreides himself, Willy freaking Wonka, he will now produce movies for Warner Brothers Discovery because presumably these things are related after he made them so much damn money with Wonka and Dune.
Oh, they're related. Like the report said that that's the reason he's being given this deal.
Okay.
Seems, I mean, Timothée Chalamet is like one of our biggest stars right now. It's rare for someone to be in this many successful movies. And yeah, I wonder if that's because it's not like Timothée Chalamet's the reason Dune was a success. He's great at picking things. I'll say that. He's great at picking things to star in.
True.
But you need to like build a good team. And that is it. I agree, Martha. This was a good episode. The energy level was frantic.
It was.
And I want to thank all of you for watching. This is a fun time. June 16th, Fantasy Fan says, yes, House of the Dragon. Let's go. House of the Dragon season 2, June 16th.
Let's go.
Booba times 2 is a big fan of Jurassic Park, the novel. It could sound strange, but bet they do it. But he's thinking they're going to reboot it.
You know?
A closer novel adaptation.
That's a fair point. Jurassic Park, the book, is very, very different from Jurassic Park, the movie. The only caveat I would add there is that Michael Crichton was involved in making it a movie. And if Michael Crichton thought it should be different, I kind of trust Michael Crichton, but it would be interesting to see.
It's like sometimes you change things because doing it the exact way in the book isn't a great idea, but sometimes it is. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, that was a good one. Thanks for watching. We are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time on the Winter is Coming Facebook page and also the Winter is Coming YouTube page. You can also find us on YouTube, on TikTok at winteriscoming.net. And
Spotify.
You can download this podcast wherever podcasts are available, be it Spotify, be it YouTube Music, I want to say, or we're everywhere. Go write your congressperson and ask where to find podcasts. You'll find us there. And just thanks for watching. Goodbye from me. Goodbye from other Dan. And goodbye from
Falcor.
Little Falcor. Bye, everybody. Bye.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Thank you.
say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.